Okay. What you have before you on this front page, today is November 29th. We're learning Mishlei today. What you have before you is your Bistrol Salater's 13 principles of characteristics, 13 midos that he feels that Mishlei, Pirkei Avos, Hilchos Deos, right, whatever self-help guide to perfect oneself, that they can be encompassed by these 13 midos. Okay? To be sure, I mentioned yesterday the 37 gates of Orchos Tzadikim, right? 37 meters of the Sha'arim of the Orchos Tzadikim. The reason why he has 37, what? You think that you can find so many more midos of Orchos Tzadikim than you can find of Yisrael Salanter? Well, if you look at the list, you'll see why Orchos Tzadikim has so many more than Yisrael Salanter. It's very simple. The gates that Orchos Tzadikim talks about are some negative traits, right? He has a gate of anger, he has a gate of jealousy, he has a gate of slothfulness. Okay, you get it? Obviously, if you talk about, let's say, alertness or diligence, that encompasses don't be slothful. Okay, that's obvious. I don't want to stress this. Okay, I'm just trying to explain why Orchos Tzadikim's list that he calls for Mishlei has so many more categories than these 13 of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Get it? Okay? So I read through them. Emes, truth, Zrizus, alertness, Charitzus, diligence, Kavod, respect, Menuchas, anefesh, peace of mind, Nachas, gentleness, Nikayon, cleanliness, Savlanut, patience, Seder, orderliness, Anava, humility, Tzedek, righteousness, Kimutz, thrift, and Shtika, silence. I gave you an assignment over the entire semester to read all of Sefer Mishlei, and you put into your own words, if you run up to a certain midah you think is being stressed here, write it down. And write as many as you can. Alright? I just gave you an assignment. Here it is. Okay? You may be able to break down some of these into, like, you know, you may have questions. Truth is certainly an extremely important midah to harness, to always be true. But, I mean, this is a debate of itself. Is there a categorical imperative of truth-telling? What do we mean by that? You ever hear of it? A categorical imperative. Immanuel Kant, an 18th century philosopher. 19th century already, even passed into the 19th century also. So, Immanuel Kant believed that if you have a midah like truth, that is crucial. Certainly, we all agree, right? Then it's 100% true. It's like mathematical. You get it? 3 plus 4 is not debatable. Right? But the question will come up, a moral question may come up. Is it ever, are we ever allowed to lie because of some higher midah? Someone comes to the door with a big butcher knife or a meat cleaver in his hand and says, is Mr. Lippin here? He goes, well, why do you want to know? Because I'm about to kill him. Right? So am I, and you're there behind the curtains. Don't tell him I'm not here. Right? So what's my next line? The truth or a lie? So, well, why do you want to kill him? I just didn't like the remark you made to me before. Right? I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Wait a second, let me go and ask him. You know. Alright, now there are different levels where this can go. Abraham thinks that if people think that this is my wife, they'll kill me. So he says she's my sister. But then when accosted about it, he says, well, she's technically my sister because she's my niece. She is, at least according to Chazal. So he calls Sarah's brother Lot, his brother. He says, they call each other brother. So if I call my nephew brother, I call my niece sister. In other words, technically speaking, I wasn't lying. Right? Yaakov said, Anochi, I am who I am, Esav b'chorecha. I wasn't lying. Right? Ah, come on. If you're trying to save a life, just lie. So the Kant says that he doesn't trust this debate. He doesn't trust the debate of whether it's mutar l'shanos mipnei hashalom or not. Right? When you can change the truth for the interests of peace or even something more than peace, like saving a life. Okay, so this is a very simple list, but each one of these 13 can be debated. Do you know what I'm saying? In Mishle, if you're thrifty and you're diligent and you're alert, right, let's break down the psukim now. What are you going to have? No, talk to me. Success. No, what else? Come on. The psukim we learned ourselves. You'll have what to eat. Right? Your children will be cared for, right? In some sense. Now, like we've been saying all along this semester in Mishle, that's not a guarantee. That just means most of the time. What does most of the time mean? 51% of the time? 98% of the time? Something in between? There's another book of Tanakh written because we sometimes see that that's just not... I want that to be true all the time. Right? And when it's not true, what book kicks in? Koheles. I mean, I expect this to fall 100% of the time that I drop it. There's a law, it's called gravity. And I don't expect that I don't want to take odds here, right? You want to bet a penny, a billion to one of what's going to happen when I let go of this? Do you think I arranged for some kind of magnetic field to pick this up so I can win $10 million? Right? Don't bet on it. Okay? So, gravity is a law, right? Is it a law that if you're thrifty and diligent, you'll have what to eat? No. This book isn't about laws. Okay, and that's that. There goes Kant again. Are laws meant to be broken? Does everybody who goes through a stop sign deserve a ticket? Without stopping. Maybe not if it's an ambulance, if it's a fire truck, if it's a person on the way to delivering a baby. Right? The exceptions to the rules is why we have Koheles. Okay. All right. So Yisrael Salanta put together this list of 13. Turn the page over. I may have enough for each of you to have two, so that you can look at the list together at the same time. Wait, it's my last one. Okay. What do you see? They're not all in the same order, right? First of all, the first thing that just jumps out at you is that the list has the same number. From the standpoint of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who lived in the first half of the 18th century, in the 19th century, 13 midos, okay, there are 13 midos of Rabbi Shmuel, right? And then we say in the morning, there are 13 midos of Hashem, right? 13 is this great number when you want to say a large number, right? Tosfos in the second paragraph of Sechas Brachos on the Gemara that says, it talks about a rabbi who says, I passed 13 shoals to get to this base midrash. And Tosfos says, laf dafka, 13 is just when you want to say a lot. In Mishle, that number is 7. Okay, but 13 is a big number, so when I'm going to come up with an amount of midos, better 13 than 14, better 13 than 11. No, that's, I'm just saying. What made Ben Franklin come up with 13? I don't know too much about Ben Franklin or where he was culling this information from.
Maybe for Mishlei, maybe not. The 13 are, what I'd like you to do is, at some point, write them out and see which one matches which. Do they all match? You know, I see truth on Yisrael Salanter's side. I don't see truth. I see order.
There's justice.
I see justice, right? Truth is justice. I see tzedek, righteousness. And Yisrael Salanter says, okay, you can look at that, all right? The fact that cleanliness is on both of them is very, very interesting. You ever hear of a saying, cleanliness is next to godliness? That's a Gemara. Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah, if you test. It's a Gemara. Okay? There seems to be a Gemara at the end of Sota that says something similar, but where it gives a whole list of things that lead to another thing, and this thing leads to another thing, and if you're pure, you'll be clean, and if you're clean, you'll be godly, and if you're godly, you'll be then, right? What's interesting is the last thing that all these things are supposed to lead to is chesed, to be a chosid. Why isn't that on Yisrael Salanter's list? Why isn't chesed on this list?
Because if you have all of them, you have chesed.
Could be. Could be that if you do all 13, you're a chosid. He has tzedek, why don't you have chesed? So, in order to answer this question, we have to see that really chesed is not something that Mishlei incorporates as much as tzedek. It's important to know the difference between these two words in order to fully appreciate what this list is doing and how difficult it is to be a true chassid. Because tzedek can be legislated. I can force you to be a tzaddik, but I can't force you to be a chassid. What do I mean by that? I think we use these terms interchangeably today, and I think in today's terminology, I think that tzaddik is higher than chassid. So if I finish the Gemara in Tanis, it says chassid is much higher than tzaddik. And you'll see why etymologically. Because in Chassidus today, the adherents are called Chassidim. The guy at the top is called the Tzaddik. Right? The Rebbe is the Tzaddik of all the Chassidim. I think that's I'd like to show you that that's a misnomer in my attempt to explain why Chesed is not on this list. Because I can try to train all of you to do all 13 of these things, as we learned, say, from Mishlei. But for chesed, first of all, it's being difficult to define chesed. Tzedek, by definition, what's the etymology of tzedek? What it means to be?
Tzedek.
How is it translated here?
Righteousness.
Righteous. But it's a good English translation. Meaning that you're right. In English, I don't think righteous the way we understand it today, right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, to be righteous is such a terminology that is so benighted, and it is so high, it is so lofty, right? I don't think that's the way it was originally meant to be understood. I think that in the same way, English doesn't do a good job of translating this word, tzedakah. How do we usually translate it?
Charity.
Charity. I don't think there's a good English word. I don't think one exists that really goes to the core of what we expect people to do when doing tzedakah. Let me explain. Because if you have a charitable person, everyone will say that's someone I want at my table. That's a good guy. That's it, right? I like a charitable person. Everybody wants a charitable person, right? But if someone is you know what, that person is just, it's not charitable. Would you say that that's a bad person? No, he's neutral. He's not charitable.
He's not able to be charitable because he doesn't have the money to be charitable, right? It's a bad English word because in Hebrew, not doing charity means that you're not tzedek, you're not right. If someone in English is not righteous, you wouldn't say, well, I don't want him for my daughter. How many people are righteous? You know what I'm saying? It's in English. In Hebrew, and there is no such word, of course, but if you're not righteous, you know what you are? You are wrongous. Get it? Or wrong. You know what I'm saying? Right, being right, has produced a beautiful English word called righteous. You know what I'm saying? But not being righteous. You know, in some cases, if you sit out this debate, you're not just neutral, you're wrong. If you sit out being right, you're wrong. You know what I'm saying? I'll be getting this. Right? Chesed is different. It's hard to even put your fingers around what is this word. Right? Usually words can be broken down a little bit. It's just the etymology. Chesed is not used too often. It's a targum in this past week's Parsha, when the brothers tell Shechem, who just violated their sister, you all know the story I'm talking about, right? He said, if you want to marry our sister, you've got to do something first, which is circumcise. Right? And if you circumcise all your men and join our group, we can talk. Right? Now this is not going to be an easy thing for him to convince his people to do. Right? Although circumcision was practiced in Egypt at the time, this is not a great thing for grown men to do. Although in Egypt, it was grown men who circumcised themselves, who got circumcised. It was not children, it was grown men. So, hear me about this, is that he convinced them by saying, well, we're going to take everything they have anyway. That's written in the Pasuk. It makes you feel like I don't know if he's being disingenuous. He just had to say something to convince his men to do this. Right? And they all went along with it. So the brothers said, you must circumcise yourself because for us Hebrews, an orla is a cherpa. That's the word the Torah uses. You've heard of it, a cherpa? Anyone here speak Yiddish? It's a cherpa and a busha. You ever hear that word? A cherpa. L'charef means to. Not just to chastise, but to demean, to deride. Right? So the targum to the word cherpa is chasuda. Huh? How does that fit? The targum to this shoresh is always chesed in Tanakh. But what? Isn't that going in the wrong direction? Not only that, later on in Parshas Kedoshim, when the Torah says, a man may not marry his sister. If you marry your sister, you are committing chesed. Huh? What's going on here? Right? Now this is something that came up a few weeks ago. Because the Eish HaShechayil we sang about in Perek Lamed Aleph, it says about her, v'toras chesed al lashono. What does that mean? Torah's chesed? Every bit of Torah moves in the direction of chesed? What is that? So I can go on and on and tell you all the unusual places where chesed is used. There's a bird in Tanakh called the chasita. Why? You know what bird that is? A stork. Is a chasita.
The one that brings the
babies. The babies, yeah. That's why, by the way. Well, because it has a big flap and it's about the size of a newborn baby. So that's right? Okay. What is all this? Okay.
So
this is why I've given you all this to explain why chesed can't be legislated. Tzedek can. I can tell you have to give tzedakah. And I can tax you. I can come to your house and, like the IRS will do, and I'm going to take things. And our system of government allows me to do it. Right? Okay? That's actually not true. You have to give your trumas and maestros, and the Kohen can't come into your granary and actually take it. You have to give it to you. To maestros, you give it to him. But what we can do is exercise the power of the community to isolate people who don't give tzedakah, and isolate people who should be giving and don't. Right? So the amazing thing is that if a destitute poor person who can barely afford to feed his family, right, owns some land, right? You hear where I'm going with this? In America, if you make less than a certain amount, you don't pay taxes at all. You get things. You get food stamps, you get free tuition, you get free medical care. But in Israel, if you own a plot of land, no matter how poor you are, and you just manage to feed your family with whatever the land produces, you also have to give pay. You also have to leave some standing grain for other poor people. And you can't take it and say, well, I'm poor myself, I'm going to take my own pay. No. You also have to leave like in Shikha if your workers or you leave something behind. Alright? You hear me? Alright, so these things can be legislated. You cannot legislate chesed. Can anyone who's clever look at all these uses and see what do they have in common? What is chesed? Why is there a sexual relationship between a brother and a sister called chesed? Why more than between an aunt and a nephew? So, what? Any thoughts? Chesed is precisely this point. It's not right or wrong. It's unpredictable. It breaks the boundaries of normalcy. It goes beyond expectation. It's precisely why I can't legislate it, and why it's not on this list. It's not, you can't include chesed. I like your answer. You can't include chesed as one of 13 midot, because chesed is what you hope to become if you do all 13 of them. It's not one of the 13. It's where you move when you do all 13. Okay. So I'm not sure if it's proper to call the followers of the tzaddik a chesed. Okay. You know, the Vilna Gaon who fought against Hasidus because he felt that they were exercising their chesed to break the boundaries of normalcy. You know, they changed the nusach from nusach Ashkenaz to nusach Sfard. They were davening on their heads. They were doing crazy things. So if the Vilna Gaon had seen Hasidus today, he probably would not be against it. But I can make the counter argument is that the reason why Hasidus is what it is today is because of the Vilna Gaon kept them within the framework of not going too far crazy about, you know, directions. All right, you know, it depends on whether you're for or against. All right, but the Vilna Gaon's own appellation was HaChosid MeVilna. He was not called the Vilna Gaon in his lifetime. He was called HaChosid MeVilna. Ironic. You know your history about the Hasidus and Misnagdus at the time. Okay, so Ben Franklin, we know, signed the Declaration of Independence. He was the elder statesman. He was the oldest person to sign the second oldest to sign the Declaration of Independence. And he certainly did not ever live at the same time as Yisrael Salanter. The two people never met. The question is there someone that did meet Benjamin Franklin that did have some kind of influence on Yisrael Salanter, and I believe we have an identification of that person. You see the name of the book I wrote on the board right behind me to my left. So there was in 1844 and 1845, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter put together this list and put together a syllabus, so to say, or a reading list of all the important books of Musar in his time. His point was what I said in the last class. His point was, all of our learning, last time we did the Gemara, we based on David Zvi Hoffman's Cheshbon, that Pirkei Avos comes at the end of Shas, and the Rambam's Cheshbon the other way, is that, no, I don't want to teach that at the end of my book, I want to teach that at the beginning of my book. Right? The purpose of all our learning is to perfect our nature, to be a better person. Right? I was coming home from an airport recently, and I was in LaGuardia, and it's a small belt where the luggage comes out. It's usually small luggage that comes out from the JFK. You have a big luggage coming over overseas. But so there was, the belt pushed two suitcases off to the side. So one person got up, and it was a woman, and she stepped on over the belt and took her bag and walked off. Right? What would be so schlecht if you just push the other one back on the belt so that person now can find their bag also? And I just thought, okay, you know, look, she's just had a long flight and she's busy, she wants to get home. It was late at night, it's like 11:30 at night already. But, you know, a more refined character goes and takes her own and then puts the other one there also. Now, look, maybe we shouldn't judge because that person, maybe she's on her way to visit an elderly parent who's sick or something. You know, I don't know what I say. Here we have to, you know, break for some anecdotes. Here I'm visiting a woman in my shul who just had triplets.
Awesome.
Right? It was a long time ago. And my car had at the time a clergy pass that allows me to park anywhere in the city, in front of a hospital, in front of a place of worship, and anywhere where it says no parking. Not if it says no standing, but anywhere it says no parking, I can park there, as long as my thing is in the window, especially near a hospital. So at that time, however, it was a construction zone. I'm not going to park in a construction zone. There are cranes and tractors and other things, and there's no place to park because they're digging up the ground. So all the spots, the 15, 20 spots where I could normally park, are all gone. So I had to park like everyone else down Fifth Avenue and down Madison Avenue. Madison is crazy. You can't find a spot there. But on Fifth Avenue, sometimes if you drive slowly, you'll find a spot. So here I'm driving along Fifth Avenue between 103rd Street and 98th Street, the hospital in between. And I see the telltale sign of someone going to a car. You live in New York, you know. I see someone carrying a bassinet with a new, what looks like a newborn baby. There's a woman next to him, and he's got a key in his hand. So I see he must be right near his car. Right? This is before the time we had the beepers. So he's carrying the key in it. And so I slowly drive behind him. And I catch him. He's making a beeline towards the car. And I put on my blinker to the right. And I see about 30 feet ahead is a double parked car. So I get right behind him. Bang, I'm in. Once you put your blinker on to go in, it's your spot. So this person who's double parked there, so he's driving backwards quickly and comes along suddenly and says, she says, that's my spot. I said, excuse me, I'm behind the car, I'm physically here. Right? And I happen to have been wearing, I had my hat in the car, I wear black hat, Travis, but I'm not sure if I was wearing a yarmulke or a hat, but how it went from one to the other. But she could see I'm Jewish. And she starts screaming at me in Yiddish. That this is my spot. I have to have it. I was here first. I'm waiting. So I said, lady, I'm here. I'm right here. The guy is right there. The guy goes there and said, lady, he's right there. He's blinking his car already. But meanwhile, she's blocking traffic. Because this happens quickly, but there is a moving truck right up ahead on the left side. So with her where she was and where I'm waiting for the spot, there's only one lane on Fifth Avenue to and this starts to cause a bit of a traffic jam. So I'm thinking to myself, listen, she may be visiting a child on chemotherapy. She may be visiting, she looked older, she may be visiting a grandchild who's sick. She may be visiting her husband who's dying. I'm visiting a woman with triplets, right? So, you know, this kid's left, I'll look for another spot, right? I said, lady, you need this spot more than I do. Okay. The fact is, on 96th Street, there's plenty of no parking signs. I could park anywhere I want on 96th. Just have to walk all over 96th, down 5th Avenue to 101st or so. So, okay, I can handle that. All right. Turns out I just drove around Madison one more time. I said, I'll make the left on 96th. I'll drive back up Madison, up to 101st is a way to get through. I'll come by to park again, and if I don't find anything, I'll park on 96th. Turns out when I made that circle once, I found another spot on 5th Avenue with no debates, and I made my way up. Right? Now, I happen to know, how could I possibly know, that this woman was definitely not visiting someone who was sick. Because you know why? She was the mother of the woman I was visiting. She was in the room. When I knocked on the door, you can't walk right into a room and just say, I'm knocking on the door to visit this person. And the person answering the door, heavens. Luckily, I had my hat. This one was in the car when I was driving. I didn't have my hat on. Didn't wear a hat, of course. But when I put my hat on to visit. It looks more formal, you know. So I put my hat on to visit, and I walked in, and I quickly, you know, I didn't want to know that she had just, you know, lost her lunch with me. She really behaved improperly, right? It's not a way for an adult to behave, right? So I mean, people kill each other. Parking spot. Right? So in the news out, there was an actor or someone who punched someone out, I don't know, whatever it is, over a stupid parking spot. And they save. What they do is people stand in the parking spot. You know, the law is that you can't, you're not allowed to do that.
Really?
Yeah. I said, listen, you can stand there, but I'm parking. I'm going backwards.
In Israel, it's
against the law here. A cop will give you a ticket if you're doing that. Right? Now, usually in New York, they just let it go. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like here, I live on, this happens all the time. I live on West End Avenue. Right? So this car is going this way. This car is going this way. Right? There's a double line in between. Here's my house. So I'm driving down here. I see a spot right in front of my house. Beautiful, baby. I'm coming right in. But here is a car waiting here to make an illegal U-turn before I got there, waiting for all these other cars in the second lane to pass him, so we can make a U-turn, and he says, I saw that spot first. Right? Can you picture this? Anybody drive here? Right? And he said, excuse me, buddy, I'm here with my blinker on, waiting to back into the spot. You're across the street, waiting to break the law and take the spot. But he says, but I saw it first. So I said, excuse me, sir, did you ever learn about Metziah, Daf Beis, Re'io, Kanya? Right? That's the whole thing. The first mission of Maseches Bava Metziah teaches that seeing something does not acquire it. I saw that $20 bill first, and I was running over to get it. Excuse me, sir, my foot is on the $20 bill. It's mine. Okay, this is just as a tangent. All right, but you see, this person, what can I tell you? When people are indulged as kids, I sometimes hear a kid on the phone, the way they talk to their parents. I said, excuse me, you know, I don't want to tell you how to parent your child, but how do you let your kid talk to you that way? The child is cursing at you with your rabbi on the phone, and you told him, I'm talking to Rabbi Schwartz. How do you let, you can't let them talk that way. Not just because it's bad as a three-year-old, heaven forbid what this kid becomes as a 23-year-old if they continue talking this way. This is propriety, excuse me. Look, everyone can do true when people grow up. And Yetzer Lev HaAdam, Ra Minu Rav. Our nature is to be bad when we're young, and then hopefully that fixes its way through. Right? The four kids at the Seder, they're us. We start off as a Shener Der Lishol, of course. Then we move to Tum. What's that? What's that? Mazeh, mazeh, mazeh. Then everybody, I don't care who you're talking about, everybody becomes a Rasha. Some people for less time than others. Some people get the Rasha out of them early. But everyone goes to a Rasha stage before hopefully we end up as a Chacham stage. Right? So in books like Mishlei, teachers like Yisrael Salanter decided in 1844 that I'm going to collect all the books out there, right, that teach you that you can be a from person, you can do all the right things, right?
But if you have not perfected your personality, I'll question your frugality. If you have a landlord that's going to evict a couple, this happened in my community, evict a couple that can't afford their rent, or they can't afford their rent increase, and he evicts them during the 9 days, I'll go public and I'll say, I'm sorry, we don't do that. This is a person who's a Rosh Yeshiva, he's smicha from 13 places, and he, that's not from. As far as I'm concerned, you're eating treif, right? So that's what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter wanted to achieve. Okay? You can say, well, there's two sides to every story, maybe they're extorting money, maybe... I'm sorry, you don't evict a couple that just had a baby. Just don't evict them. Right? You own 2,000 apartments. You can handle this one. Work with the community. Do something, but you don't evict them. Right? Okay. They give so much money to the kollel in the community that no rabbi would say anything. They give so much money to every shul that no rabbi would say anything. So I said, you know what? And that's what I said. This is like kamtza bar kamtza. The rabbi is being silent over this travesty in our community. I'm sorry, not while I'm here. Made him give in. As I said, okay, we're going to get protesters in front of your house with placards on Shabbos Chazon that say, blah, 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 blah. I never said the name, by the way, of Shabbos. I said, we don't evict people. Jews don't evict Jews in the 9 days. We worked it out. Worked out some kind of system, which was mutually acceptable to both sides, which is the way it should have been done in the first place. Okay, so one of the books that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter put on his syllabus was this book called Cheshbon HaNefesh by Mendel Lefin. Okay, Mendel Lefin. Knew Ben Franklin and had an association with him. Okay. Right. Lefin suggests that the reason why Ben Franklin came up with 13, right, is that 13 is the amount of weeks in every season. It can be also the amount of cards in each suit in the playing deck, right? But there are 13 times 4, 52 weeks in the year, right? And there are 13 weeks in each season. And what you can do is spend a week in each season working on each one of these midos. See it? And then do it again in the spring, and do it again in the summer, and do it again in the fall. This Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's movement was not accepted universally. I think it is today. What's probably the most studied book of Musar today? What? Okay, I'm probably right. You're probably right, but after that. a more modern book, written in the last 200 years. Mesilas Yesharim, of course, everyone knows that, right? Everybody had a Seder in Yeshiva, Mesilas Yesharim, right? You know the irony of it, of course, is that in his day, he was reviled. No one, it's such a shame. It's like, I would say, he's the equivalence of Vincent van Gogh in painting. Because you know, in his lifetime, Vincent van Gogh could not sell a painting. Crazy? You have something with his signature on it? $5-6 million, $17 million. Someone will pay $100 million maybe.
some crazy rich Asian will pay you $89 million for a print with Vincent van Gogh's signature on it. Right? That is... this is Moshe Chaim Lutzato. Right? His grandnephew was Shmuel David Lutzato, the Shadal. Okay, but so... Because at first, when the Musar moment was presented, to the world, there were, I think, you know, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who wrote Nefesh HaChaim, right? So that would be Joseph Ber Soloveitchik's grandfather, right? So his son, who is his name? Chaim's son was Moshe, and his father is Moshe. Moshe's father was Chaim Soloveitchik, the famous Brisker Rav. His father was the Beis Halevi, and he's named after Yosef Dov. So Yosef Dov is quoted by Rav Chaim, who wrote Cheshbon HaNefesh, who did go along with the Muslim movement. He said that my father said that the Muslim movement is wrong-headed. It's not for us. He compared it to, I think for him, it was castor oil, but let's say for us, chemotherapy can save a life, right? I was once in a room where someone was getting chemotherapy intravenously, and it dripped out, some of it dripped out, and it looked like it burned a hole in the sheet. It was so powerful, it was like bleach. You know what you're putting inside your body? You're putting in such powerful drugs that are going to save this person's life. Because it's destroying that which will kill you. But it's also destroying other things, and you know, the value of chemotherapy is as we're doing the research, is how to kill the bad stuff without killing a lot of the good stuff. Right? Nonetheless, it's a necessity. Right? So, at that time, I guess castor oil was the thing that they all meant, but I think that's the example that they say they'd be used, is that a person who's sick is castor oil going to help him? If a well person takes that, it's going to make you sick. A well person takes chemotherapy. It's going to make you sick. Right? So this is the presentation of this Muslim movement. What I'd like you to do is read this little line of the autobiography of Ben Franklin. You know, look, he's on our $100 bills. But just go online a little bit about Ben Franklin, and you're not going to get two paragraphs before you start to read about some of the real bad stuff that he did personally. All right? He was banished from France for some of that stuff, okay? I will tell you this. If you do come across, please do this. I would like you, because I'm not going to talk about Ben Franklin anymore. Is that if you do see stuff about anti-Semitic behavior on his behalf, it's mamish, a total fabrication lie. There's a Ben Franklin museum in Philadelphia. There's nothing in there that gives any hint to any anti-Semitic behavior on his part. But there is a screed that's out there that says that he predicted that if America allows Jews to stay in the country, that they'll end up destroying all of this new country of ours. He never said that. Right. Okay, so look that up, and we're going to continue, Mr. Shem, next time. Right here, we're going to looking at some of these midos, Kesedah, permission.